Well, after 10:30 on a Wednesday now, we're talking a bit more country music in our Country Music Muster. And last week we heard from Tim Holland from ABC Music. This week, as we look forward to the 40th Country Music Festival, we wanted to tap into the theme, looking forward and looking back, and head to the very first Golden Guitars in the very first year of 1973. And one of the country music originals, Max Ellis, has joined us this morning. Hello, Max.
Good morning, Kelly.
It's always lovely to have you visit us.
It's always lovely to be here.
Thank you so much for popping in. Now, what do you think, again, of the theme for the 40th year, looking forward, looking back?
Well, I think it's highly appropriate because that's what it is all about. The Country Music Festival, there's been a lot of controversy about it lately, a lot of talk about where it's going, but you can't decide where it's going until you know where it's been and why it started and what made it grow and all those factors that have come together over the last four decades to produce the event we have today. I always use the analogy that a lot of people who have been in the industry recently or in various things associated with the festival recently seem to think that they're getting on the lift at the first floor, but what they're really doing is getting on the lift on the fourth floor,
and the 40th
already
floor.
The 40th floor, if you like. Yeah, sorry. And in fact, there's all those years of tradition and expertise and experience and so on that come together to make the event we have today.
Well, back in 1973, what was that first Golden Guitar night like?
Well, it was probably nothing like we expect these days. It was put together by a group of radio people who probably didn't really know what we were doing at that stage. We thought we'd been to a couple of award shows elsewhere. We had watched at one award show where they handed over a Perspex trophy, which fell to pieces as it was received. So we knew we didn't want a Perspex trophy, hence the Golden Guitar, nice, solid, heavy cast bronze. And we also knew that we'd need a bit of help, so Bill Gleason at that time was working at Radio 2TM, and so Bill came along and helped us with the stage production, which was very useful indeed.
Who made the first Golden Guitar?
The first Golden Guitars were made, the design was decided by John Minson and myself at the station, and John had said that it should be a cutaway guitar of a very country music type, and so we had decided on what we wanted, and then Harry Frost, who is a local artist, actually produced the mould for the castings. John finished it off and prepared it, and it went off to a foundry in Sydney, in Alexandria in Sydney, and they cast those first guitars, and they were very rough in those days, not like the gleaming, glistening golden guitars of today, but a much rougher texture. And John finished them off. They came up as pretty rough lumps of metal, and John smoothed off the sharp edges and the rough edges, and they were mounted on a block of Tasmanian blackwood, which had been donated to us from a bunch of fans in northern Tasmania who knew we were looking for some nice timber to put the Golden Guitar on. So they organised a lot of timber, and that still happens today, that Tasmanian blackwood is used to mount the guitars.
Wow, there you go. All right, well, in that first year, the winner of the APRA Song of the Year was given to Joy McKean for Lights on the Hill, sung by Slim Dusty. So a fairly sad song, actually. I was thinking a little bit, to be honest, Max, a song, the story of a trucker carrying a heavy load, blinded by the lights and the rain.
Well, it is a sad song, but it's a very realistic song. And of course, it has a very close association with Tamworth, that song. In June 1971, Slim and Joy were driving up to Queensland to meet with Barry Thornton and the Hamilton County Bluegrass Band, who had come over from New Zealand, to start a northern tour in Warwick in Queensland. And Slim was driving a van which was heavily loaded, and he pushed off from Sydney, and they were trying to do Sydney to Warwick in a day, which even these days is really pushing it.
It's going.
And Joy was driving a very heavily loaded station wagon with a trailer. with a caravan on the back of it, I mean, a caravan. And as you, in those days, of course, when you dipped your lights, you didn't do it with a little stalk on the steering wheel. There was a switch on the floor. Very convenient. I don't know why they abandoned it. I still sometimes find myself looking for the dip switch on the floor. But Joy, of course, had her left leg in a splint, and so that limited her movement as far as the dip switch goes. So she was using her right foot to do the accelerator, the brake, and the dip switch. And as she was driving up the Moonbi Range, there were a lot of trucks coming down. The lights were blinding her as she was going up, and she just felt rather stressed, I think, as she was climbing up that. In those days, it wasn't a dual carriageway up the Moonbis, it was a windy old two-way road. And out of that, when she arrived at Warwick, she said to Slim, "I've written a song and about trucks coming down the Moonbi Range." And he said, "Oh, well, yes, that sounds good. Better record it." So she recorded on a little tape recorder they had. A little later, Slim erased the song by mistake, and when she wanted to go and get it, she couldn't find it and had to recreate it. And fortunately, Colin Tremworth from the Hamilton County, who's an extremely, well, she's a concert violinist originally, but with her husband Paul formed the Hamilton County Bluegrass Band, so she's a fantastic fiddler as well as a violinist, helped Joy put together that incredible violin component of Lights on the Hill. Slim allegedly thought there were too many words in it and he couldn't quite get his tongue around it, but he mastered it in the end. Joy, in the end, learnt to play the fiddle so she could perform that song on stage. And, of course, they recorded, I think, in 1972, and by 1973 it was a huge, huge hit.
Wow. Did they perform it on the night?
Yes, I think they did. I'm not quite sure.
But it
probably
was,
did. In those days, you didn't need months of preparation and rehearsal to stand up on stage and sing a song. You did it.
Well, it also picked up the best EP or single. Obviously, it was selling incredibly well.
It certainly was, and it became one of their classic songs that has retained its popularity. It still would be one of Slim's most popular songs, and one of Joy's greatest compositions.
Mm. Now, the album of the year went to Slim Dusty as well, Me and My Guitar. Mm. How big was that at the time?
Well, that was huge. In those days, Slim's album sold sort of 90 to over 100,000 units, which would be a fantastic result if you could do that today. Today, a good album might sell 30 or 40,000, and they think that's pretty good. And, of course, the whole scene's changed. There are different factors. But it was a huge album, that was when Slim was really in his heyday, and it was quite exciting to see things like Me and My Guitar and Lights on the Hill doing so well all over the nation.
Max Ellis is our guest this morning in The Music Master as we look back at the first year of the Gone Guitars in 1973 and talk about the songs that were being played on the wireless at the time and breaking records. Now, the top-selling record of the year went to Redback on the Toilet Seat. People probably remember it. So, a top-selling record. Do you remember seeing it first performed?
Yes, I do. And I've got to say, isn't it interesting that those first awards in 1973 were really launched by two such fantastic songs, Lights on the Hill and Redback on the Toilet Seat, which even today everyone remembers. Slim used to say that half his time around that period was spent denying that he was the Slim who did Redback on the Toilet Seat, because of course it was Slim Newton, not Slim Dusty. But Slim Newton was a West Australian who travelled over to Tamworth, and he came to Eric Scott, who was then at 2TM and also running Hadley Records, and told Eric that he had this song that he'd like to record, and they recorded it. It became a huge seller. It was issued on an EP, And I think they sold over 100,000 copies of that EP, which was absolutely staggering. It was staggering for any record, let alone one like that. And it became an absolute classic that's remembered today. And I think it's so iconic that it's part of Australian history now. But in those days, Eric had been running for a short, or had been planning for a while, a live radio program in conjunction with 2TM, which was called the Big T Jubilee. And it ran on Sunday nights, and the idea was that it was a live program from Eric's Hadley Studios. And so every Sunday night, live from Hadley Studios in Tamworth, country music capital, the Big T Jubilee. And one of the first, in the first program, Slim Newton performed Redback on the Toilet Seat in Eric's rather cramped studio, packed with 30 or 40 fans and the band and Slim. And the moment we heard that song, we all knew it was going to be a big hit.
Big hit, wow. Now, the instrumental of the year went to Ring-a-Ding, the Hamilton Country Bluegrass Band. How big was that one?
Well, the Hamilton County Bluegrass Band were quite a big bluegrass band in New Zealand. And in 1971, they came to Australia. They first came with Tex Morton, actually, and they did a show in the Tamworth Town Hall with Tex Morton and the Hamilton County Bluegrass Band, which was a fantastic show that was promoted by 2TM. And then later, as Tex moved on to other more exciting projects, they were left to wondering what they were going to do. And they met Slim and Joy, and there was an immediate rapport, and so they started working with Slim and Joy. And they brought a whole new sound to Slim's country band, travelling country band, because, as I said, Colleen was a great fiddler, Paul was a banjo player, and there are a couple of others as well who are in there. And they just brought an exciting new, clean, bluegrassy type sound, a modern contemporary sound to Slim's music. And so they stayed and worked with the Dusties for a couple of years before going back to New Zealand. They're still there. They've been over once or twice since then, but they're based in Hamilton in New Zealand, of course. And they're just lovely people and fantastic musicians. And they did an instrumental called Ring-a-Ding-Ding. And on the first awards, in those days, we didn't have satellite links and stuff like that that you take for granted these days. And so we very cleverly pre-recorded an interview with them. And our compere, Kevin Knapp, pretended to be talking to them live while someone else worked the tape recorder in the background. And so we had a live cross to them when we presented them with their golden guitar.
Oh, very clever. Well, Max, thank you so much for taking us back to 1973 and a look back at the year and the opening of the festival. What a year it was. Will you join us again next month and we'll head back to 1974?
Love to. Thanks, Kelly.
Thank you so much, Max.